want to begin, we're going to take a look at the next passage of Scripture, and it's Matthew. Before we turn to Matthew chapter 5, what I'd like to do is kind of what we've done before. I'll try as best I can to remember this passage of Scripture and then see if you can help me reconstruct it. So it's in Matthew chapter 5, and it's one of those occasions where Jesus says again, "You have heard that it was said to you." So those are pivotal moments. They've heard something before, and he's going to change something. "You've heard that it was said to you, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. But I say to you, do not resist an evil man. If someone strikes you on the cheek, turn also the other cheek. If someone wants to sue you for your tunic, give him your coat as well. If someone coerces you to walk a mile, then walk two. Lend to him who asks, and do not turn from him who asks to borrow from you." Okay, here's our story. It's one of those phrases that start, "You have heard that it was said, but I say to you," first thing, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. Next. What was that? Do not resist an evil person. There's a reason I'm doing this. Do not resist an evil person. What's next? Turn the other cheek. Next. If someone asks you for your shirt, you give them your coat also. Okay? Walk two. And the next one? Lend to someone. Okay. Well, here's what we're going to look at. We're going to look at the peaceable life, and if I get this machine running, there we go. I really think this passage and the one that follows talks about bullying. We think of bullying as something that happens just in the younger grades, but there's a kind of bullying talked about in this passage. Youth group and I looked at this passage this last week, and I thought, I told them, I wish that this was something that you would grow, that people would grow out of. I wish it were true that you wouldn't have to experience this kind of stuff as you grow up as an adult. But it's not true. In fact, if you see the way Jesus phrases this passage, it's phrased in terms of adults and what they experience. So, here we go. Let's take a look at this passage and more what it means. It means a lot of different things to us. It certainly feels difficult to us when we're in the middle of that kind of experience. In fact, there are things formed in childhood when you're bullied that often become a part of your pattern behavior, even as an adult. How you manage, how you self-protect, how you deal with circumstances. Jesus is teaching us the possibility of new options. I really like this one picture that I found. It was kind of amazing. It depicted bullying in with animals, pictures of animals. And when you're being bullied, it sure must feel like that little kitty does, these great big things that come pressing in on your life. So here's the passage, and I think you put that really together well. You've heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. This is patterned, actually, after an Old Testament law found in Leviticus and elsewhere, in Exodus as well. The eye, the patterned behavior or the law has been called lex talionis. Lex talionis means simply this, it's the law of retribution. I got it on the third. And that means basically if someone does this, then you are entitled to do that. It appeared in the Old Testament, and it was actually a good thing. Now, how could this be a good thing? We can't imagine an eye for an eye. Literally, if somebody's eye is poked out then by somebody else, then ooh, that just sounds horrible. Yes? That's it. It limited, actually, people overreacting in personal anger. It kept them from going beyond. And it also implied the rule of law. You had to go to some people to have this enacted. It wasn't something that you could take on your own. So you can see how it was the rule of law in that day, at least in the days of the Old Testament. It was to keep people from retaliating. Now, you can remember I don't know if you've ever seen these photographs. These photographs, the big picture over here is actually the Hatfields. That's a picture of the Hatfields, the famous feud. And the picture over to the left is a picture of the Hatfield children playing at school, playing tug of war with the McCoy children. And this huge drama is going on over here. And these children are playing together here. But they're learning things from this huge drama about how you deal with things. There's a problem with lex talionis. There's a problem with it. That we can't measure things out exactly. Let me give you an example. I was being bullied once when I was a kid. It was in junior high, probably seventh grade. And he would not leave me alone. At a football game, a high school football game, he was punching me, calling me all kinds of names, pushing me down in the dirt. And I'd had it. Finally, I took off, and he took off after me. And as I was running along, an idea came to me. The idea was to let him catch me. Almost. And to let him just put his hand on my shoulder. As soon as I felt that, I planned to drop to my feet and drop him. And that is exactly what I did. It sent him spewing out into, you know, the rough stuff on a track surface, and then off into the edge where there were stickers, the little green pointy kind, and also goat heads. Have any of you seen goat heads? And he was a bloody mess when he got up. Now, a lot of people say you've got to deal with the bully. If you don't deal with them, this is kind of what I grew up hearing, they'll never leave you alone. I dealt with the bully. but my calculated solution went way beyond what I intended. I intended to roll him and leave. I didn't intend to create a bloody mess. That's the problem with Lex Talionis. We cannot all the time calculate the mess that's going to occur. And that's why Jesus forces us into a whole new way of dealing things. Now, we can deal with things when we look at our options. There's the bigger stick, like the Hatfields and the McCoys. They always one-upped each other. The bigger stick goes something like this. If you kill my dog, I'll kill your dog and your cow. And maybe your ducks. And maybe your horse. And then you'll never do it again. So that's the bigger stick idea. There's also patterned reactivity, and that's where Lex Talionis comes in, or this idea of an eye for an eye or a tooth for a tooth. Patterned reactivity. Jesus is saying, in the kingdom, that's going to go away, and something new is going to happen. Incidentally, one person said, an eye for an eye makes the world blind. I think it was Gandhi who said that. And there's a point to that. In the peaceable life, then, we have these options. The bigger stick, patterned reactivity, and a kind of responsiveness that actually transforms the circumstances. And what happens here is that Jesus gives, related to that, here is the responsiveness that Jesus enjoins. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. What that reads is, what do you want me to be, a doormat or a punching bag? When we hear these words, very often we wonder if that's where we're going to end up. A doormat or a punching bag for other people. Here's what Jesus is saying. There was a reason why I went like this. When it says, do not resist an evil man. The word resist has to do with meeting a person with equal and aggressive force. See that? That's what it means to resist. It doesn't mean to simply become a doormat. It means to be aggressively responsive. Why would we not want to do that? Well, you can see that's a recipe for escalation. It's just going to escalate. If you match a person with the same kind of behavior, you're probably going to get the same thing back again, or it heated up a little bit. So that's what the idea is there. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. And then he gives us some examples. First, the example of a cheek. Someone being slapped on the right cheek. Now, people didn't hit other people with the left hand in Jesus' day, in the New Testament time. They hit another person with the right hand. So if you're going to hit a person on the right cheek with your right hand, what does that look like? It's a backhand. It's a backhand. In that culture, just as it is in ours, a backhand is an extreme insult, isn't it? It's one of the most insulting things that you could possibly do. So I want to just stop there and say this. The four examples that Jesus is going to give us aren't simply ends in themselves. That is, if I ever get into a situation where someone backhands me, then I'll know exactly what to do. It isn't that concrete, okay? It is possible that that could happen, but these are kingdom principles that he's laying out for us that can be applied to many things in life. The insults that we get from other people, verbal insults, qualify here. A text message, "You are such a loser." It has that possibility. So there's the example of the cheek. If someone strikes you on the cheek, you turn to the other cheek to them as well. Is this a doormat? I don't think it's a doormat. In Jesus' day, if a greater struck a lesser, like a master a servant, once he struck him, the servant's immediate response would have been this: to cower. If it was an equal, striking an equal, then that equal person could take that person to court for striking him, just as they could in our day. It would have been extremely risky for a lesser to strike a greater in their culture. No, I think what Jesus is doing here is actually showing us some assertiveness. Instead of cowering, you choose. Here it is. If you have to hit, go ahead. What that behavior does is it forces the other person to rethink what they're doing. You see that? There's the principle. How can we force people to rethink what they're doing? The same is true in the next illustration. The illustration of the coat or cloak. Oh, there's the turning the other cheek. I just like the picture. Here's the coat. Now it says, if someone wants to sue you, and then in this case, New Testament times, people would actually, for collateral, take their tunic, which is a one-piece kind of shirt thing that went down below your knees. They would take a tunic, and they would offer that as collateral for the day while they borrowed money from somebody, and then use that money to do something, buy something and sell it, and then come back, give the money, and they'd have a little bit of profit. That's the picture behind this. So they would take the inner garment, the tunic, and they would still have their coat to cover themselves up with. So in this case, the person who's doing something is actually, they are legitimate, they could legitimately say, the loan's up, I want paid. Oh, you don't have the money. Well, I want your tunic. The picture that's being pictured here, however, the whole context, I think, is someone who's being a little unfair about that. What do you do when someone is actually threatening some personal possessions? What do you do with that? How do you respond? Well, he says, okay, take your coat and offer that to him as well. Now, you can imagine what that will leave the person. It will leave them standing there naked, wouldn't it? If they offered the coat in Old Testament times, they were bound by law to return that coat at night. They couldn't keep the coat. They couldn't keep the coat because people used the outer coat to actually sleep in. And that's the only thing they had to cover up. Now here's, Jesus is like turning it on end. Think about what it is that will help the other person think what they're doing. Are you going to leave me standing here without cloak or any clothing? That's what it does. It makes the person think. The same kind of principle. The thing is also carried out in terms of a hike. In New Testament times, a soldier could simply say to you, "I'd like you to carry my stuff." And soldiers carried a lot of stuff. Now, if a guy says, "I'm so tired of carrying all this gear," and he took it off and he packed it up, plus whatever he carried from town to town, a soldier, you would have a pretty good pack on your back. They could require you to do this, but there was a law, a Roman law, that had been established that you could only require a person to go 1 mile. So you kind of had to pick people as you went. You couldn't cause people to walk further. The picture here is coercive behavior. Someone is making you do something that you don't want to do. And Jesus' solution for that is, instead of walking 1 mile, you walk 2. And that will make that other person think about what they're doing. In fact, if you did that, they would become aware, very aware, that they could get called on the carpet for you going a second mile. Interesting. You can see how this response is more responsiveness rather than reactiveness. It's helping the other person think about what they're doing, their behavior. And then finally, there's this issue of loan. Hoop jumping. Have you had to jump through hoops for people in business? It's galling, isn't it? I think hoop jumping is very close in thought to what Jesus is saying here when someone says, "You have to walk, carry this for a mile." Sometimes when you go the extra mile, people say, "Wow, they're probably a pretty cool person. They blew the lid off of this. They did much, much more than I ever expected. Maybe next time I shouldn't push them so hard." Going the second mile isn't just to be connected with good customer service. You know, that you hear that all the time. Going the second mile is truly, in this context, when you're being forced to do something that you really would rather not do, and you carry on, and you do famously, and you do it with a good heart. So Jesus is encouraging us onward to go the second mile or the extra mile. Now we have these, also the example of a loan. I've wondered about this. There's almost a change. It almost feels like there's a change of tone when we get to this part. "Lend to him who asks, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you." Some people have just said he kind of just breaks the direction of the message here and is giving a general principle. That's possible. We need to learn to live generous lives. I think that's important for us. But I think the context supports something like this: living generous lives in the context of someone who's been perceived as an antagonist. That makes more sense to me in this passage. There is a certain kind of emotional offense that happens when someone who's been on the other side of many issues with you has been very vocal, maybe even destructive in the way they've been toward you, and then they turn around needing something from you. This is an important moment right here, because we as human beings want to say, you had your chance, buddy. You could have done better than this before. You think I'm going to help you? Are you kidding? You remember what you did? No way. I think that's more the context of this passage. It's that circumstance, that telling moment where we have the opportunity to turn an enemy into a friend. I used to laugh at Janet's brothers, one of them in particular. It may have been your dad. Found a moray eel, or an eel, down in some rocks, and he went down thinking, well, there's supper. I'll just shoot that thing with a spear gun. Just about the time that he let go of the trigger, the eel went like this onto the spear gun, and it actually pushed him back a little bit. So he thought, I guess if I can't kill it, I ought to make a friend of it. So he would shoot fish and he'd take it down and feed this eel. It was amazing. His brother went down, kind of hovering, snorkeling above him, and he says, every time that eel would hit that fish in the water on the end of his spear, he said, you can hear somebody scream underwater. Anyway, making the friend out of the enemy. I think that's what this is more the opportunity. It's an opportunity that we have to make a friend in a circumstance. There's a picture, I think a picture from Holland, that this is titled, Love Your Enemies. I don't know the context of this picture. It would be fun to find out what the context is. It's called Love Your Enemies. So implied in this story is that that person who's in the ice was the enemy of the person who's helping the person out of the ice. We have these kinds of opportunities with those who've been our bullies, who continue to be our bullies, if we'll be open. So here are a couple of things. Let's take a look at this possibility. Something that we could take home. Looking at this story, is there anything the story tells us about God? What do you hear in the story about God? Very good. What do we learn about human beings here? We do have a tendency to strike back. Anything new in this story to you? You have a question about the story?
Well, you know, it's very difficult to just stand there and look someone out on you and
There's a good, how do we live this out? It's very difficult to let someone stand there and pound on you and not strike back. And again, I think there is a principle here. I don't think that Jesus is saying that we simply become punching bags. There are other things that we may need to do. For safety's sake, we might need to remove ourselves from the circumstances. And as young people here, that's probably a better thing to do, is just to step away and not meet them, remember, head on. Okay? This is a hard one. It's difficult. Sometimes as young people, we may need to talk with somebody else, like a teacher or someone who could do something about it, a parent. That's important for safety's sake. One of the important things, I think, too, is the emotional element that's part of that. It's most difficult. And none of these circumstances are easy. So if we're going to really deal with the difficulty of it, we're going to have to allow ourselves time to feel the feelings and work through our thoughts about it. What does this story say that we should do or maybe do differently? Other thoughts? Thank you. Because each of us possess that possibility. Okay. A lot of times when this happened, we don't think we have time to think. Right? Great.
To push back a little bit on being the aggressor, I would say Jesus spoke his truth, and that could be portrayed as being aggressive. By speaking the truth as he did in these things, because I really like your thing on not bowing down, like turning the left cheek, after being struck in the cheek, he didn't do that. Because see, Jesus still stood, but he still spoke his truth.
Yes, he was correctly assertive.
And that could have been perceived even by the people that he really loved as being aggressive. Why don't you just be quiet? Why don't you just go along with what we're saying? Mm-hmm. So sometimes when you do speak your truth, it is going to elicit things that come back to you. So it may not, the goal may not always just be to live a non-aggressive path. And I feel like that's true for me.
Yeah. In each circumstance, it's not easy, what would you say, to walk in with a prepackaged idea of how it's going to play out or how I'm going to act or react. But with some principles, then we can do differently.